Michaela McAvery, on her honeymoon in Mauritius, sent shockwaves throughout Ireland and the rest of the world. The investigation was a corrupted mess, and the resulting trial was so highly publicised, sensationalised and controversial, it changed Mauritian law forever. Hey doll, welcome to episode 2. I hope you enjoyed episode 1, where we spoke about the background of Michaela Hart, an Irish and religion teacher, devout Catholic teetotaler, and 2004 Ulster Rose, and daughter of sports icon Mickey Hart. Michaela wed John McAvery in December 2010, and while on honeymoon in Mauritius, she was murdered. Ireland was shocked. Thousands of people attended her funeral, and the nation wanted answers. Today, we are going to discuss the sequence of events, the investigation, suspects, trial, media, all the stuff. This episode was requested by patron and supporter of the channel and podcast, Kirsty. Thank you, Kirsty, for supporting the platform. We're covering a lot of ground today, so I think I'm going to insert like slides so that we can like break it up into chapters because there's a lot. So let's start with the arrests. Police were told by the Mauritian Prime Minister to put the best men on this international case. The whole world was watching. Mauritius's reputation was at stake. In my opinion, with a hotel of this size, this was very quick. Within 24 hours, police had arrested 3 male Mauritian employees, janitors of the Legends Hotel, they thought were responsible or at least in connection with the murder on the 11th of January 2011. I am probably going to butcher some of the names in today's case. I have practiced them, but with my accent, sometimes it's hard to say it correctly. But I'm trying. Avinash Tribhuvan and Sandeep Monet were arrested under suspicion of murder, and Raj Thikoy, conspiracy to murder. DNA tests were taken out on these subjects. But so what happened? How did we end up on these guys? We have jumped forward quite a bit. So let's go back to the investigation. So basically, we have to go back to the very moments and movements prior to Michaela's murder in room 1025. The electronic card records gives us some insight into the sequence of events. So see here, at 3:26 p.m., John had entered room 1025, opened by the bellboy's master key card. Before this, at 2:44 p.m., we can see this is when Michaela had entered the room. However, before this, at 2:42 p.m., someone else had entered room 1025 using an electronic key card, meaning most definitely Michaela entered the room and found someone inside. And yes, of course, obviously it is a hotel employee. You would think, or is it? No, it is. Maybe. So the key which opened the door was actually the security card master key, which should have been kept in the security guard office at the time. However, this security guard card key was swapped out with a dummy key. After interviewing staff, it quickly became knowledge to the police that the staff were exchanging and sharing electronic keys to steal from the hotel guests. It's an organized theft ring. Actually, I had money stolen from me from my room in Vietnam. I went to breakfast, I came back up, and money was just taken out of my purse. I know I shouldn't leave my purse in the hotel room, but like, it's meant to be safe. It was a nice hotel. Well, so it is assumed that Michaela's murder was most likely a robbery gone wrong. Police narrowed down to their 3 main suspects, particularly suspicious of one Avinash. John claimed to have seen Avinash multiple times that day. So now we're on to Raj's eyewitness account. After some pressure, quote unquote, Raj said that on the day of the murder, he seen Avinash's cleaning trolley outside room 1025. Raj said he then heard a woman scream in pain. So he went to hide in room 1021. What a hero. Sorry. After that, Raj claims he's seen Avinash and Sandeep walk away, exit through the front door of 1025. They were sweating and out of breath. According to Raj, he confronted them. What had they been doing in room 1025? Apparently, they said to Raj that if he told anyone, they would kill him too. It was after Raj's telling of the sequence of events that the police were able to get a confession out of Avinash. 3 days after the murder, Avinash confessed that he and Sandeep had committed the murder in a robbery gone wrong. The confession read that Avinash entered the bedroom, went to the dressing table and picked up a wallet. Just as he picked up the wallet, a lady entered the room and started freaking out. She was screaming and calling him a thief, so he pushed her. She continued to shout, so he said, "We need to stop her shouting." But she kept fighting back, so Avinash said he and Sandeep squeezed her neck until the lady lost all senses. He said that they then put her in the bathtub and filled it with water to erase all trace of evidence. After Avinash signed his confession, the police got him to reenact the crime and take photos, sort of like what they did with John. They got him to pose, reenacting what he saw and what he did while in room 1025. With Raj and Avinash's confession slash statements, police felt that they had enough evidence to proceed to trial. Like, that's like it though. Avinash and Sandeep were officially charged with murder. Raj was given immunity if he promised to testify in court against his co-workers and friends. Now, before we get to the trial, there were two other suspects arrested. Hotel security officers Desan Narayan and Sinaran Mungu. I mean, it is kind of obvious that the security guards are involved in this theft ring. They have a master key card. And it was their card that was used to enter the room. Like all the rooms, but specifically in this case, 1025. So they were arrested about a week after the murder for aiding and abetting a crime. Sinaran was released and had all charges dropped. I don't know why. That just everything was dropped. He must have had an alibi. I'm not too sure why all charges were dropped. But Desan's fingerprints had been found on a towel in the bedroom. The towel he had placed under Michaela's body, under her head. Traces of his DNA was also found on a door to the safe in the bedroom. He told officers he doesn't know how they got there. He must have leaned on the door while getting the towels. Even though the bathroom towel cupboard and the safe door were like yards apart, Desan's DNA was also found on that dummy key card in the security office. Desan admitted to police that he had helped Avinash and Sandeep make copies of the master key card used to enter room 1025. Desan later accompanied police to the hotel with his lawyer for another photo reconstruction, just like John, Raj and Avinash. The police love these photo shoots. And surprisingly, Desan's charges were dropped, even though they had all this evidence. Circumstantial evidence, as he is a security officer, but like, Desan ended up only being charged with larceny. But the larceny charges were also dropped whenever Desan accused the police of brutality and forcing him to confess. The trial. Avinash and Sandeep appeared in Mauritius court on the 22nd of May 2012, both pleading not guilty. 16 months after the murder, widower John returned to the island, confident Michaela would receive justice. Michaela's murder trial was predicted to last 2 weeks, but it ended up being one of the longest trials in Mauritian history. Michaela's family had been assured by police, prosecutors and politicians that this was an open and shut case. The men had confessed and Mauritius people wanted justice just as much as Ireland. Mauritians were deeply ashamed and embarrassed that a lovely young bride would be murdered on her honeymoon in their country. However, during the trial, it didn't seem that way at all. In fact, the defendant's defense opening statements felt more like an attack on Michaela's family. There was a lot of reference to white, Western, rich celebrities in the sports entertainment world, as if that has anything to do with being murdered. After a horrid trial of 7 weeks, the jury deliberated for only 2 hours. To the shock of the Hart family, the McAvery family, and all of Ireland, both defendants were found not guilty of murder. So what happened? What happened to this open and shut case? Well, a lot happened. The trial was a shambles. A mockery of the system, the levity of the case, and a mockery of Michaela. So let's get into it. Let's start with the evidence, or lack thereof. It was obvious very early on in the case that lawyers on both sides had very little hard evidence. 35 minutes of CCTV footage did seem to be shown in court. I'm not sure how specific this footage was. It does appear to only be of the hotel reception. Like, anytime I see CCTV footage, it's always of the reception. We'll get into it. John did testify that he's seen Avinash multiple times on the day of his wife's murder, but is this enough? Is this even evidence? He works there. Also, are you 100% sure that's him? Eyewitness reports are known to be faulty, unreliable. Also, Avinash and Sandeep both had corroborated alibis for their whereabouts during the time of the murder. Also, the DNA evidence, which was sent to a lab in England, it was tested and the two men's DNA was not found anywhere in the room or anywhere on Michaela. Not on the front door, handles, windows, nothing. And remember, this was supposed to be a robbery gone wrong. Their fingerprints and DNA should be all over the place. And there was. There was fingerprints and palm prints found in the room and on the doors. The man or man fled quickly. They didn't have time to clean up a crime scene. But these fingerprints and palm prints didn't match Avinash and Sandeep. However, you could argue it is a hotel room, that could be anybody's, but it wasn't theirs. This case is basically, if Avinash and Sandeep committed this murder in this room, their DNA evidence, fingerprints and palm prints would have been found. Also, in this trial, not entered into evidence was the wallet. In Avinash's confession, he stated that he entered the room and picked up a wallet, and that was when Michaela entered the room while he was holding the wallet and she started screaming. This wallet was not dusted for fingerprints or tested for DNA. No, no, no. It was given back to John the very next day. Now, is this incompetence or is this conspiracy? Can you hear upstairs? What the hell are they doing? Having a DNA component could make the investigation longer, more complex, and more expensive. You need that specific wallet DNA to match who you accuse. So if there's no DNA, you can just say anybody did it. But on the flip side, remember, a jury has to convict someone of murder beyond a reasonable doubt. And in today's world, without DNA, there is doubt. Lacking hard and scientific evidence, the prosecution relied heavily and centered around two pieces of key evidence, or rather, eyewitness accounts. Raj's eyewitness account and Avinash's confession. In court, Raj struggled under cross-examination. He was accused of lying in court and contradicting himself, although he never veered from his original statement and account he gave to police. However, there were other witnesses who could have had crucial evidence presented in this trial. The bellboy, Rajivi, who accompanied John back to the hotel room 1025, where Michaela was discovered, he was on the witness list, but was never called to testify in court, in the trial. Rajivi's statement he gave police has several differences to Raj's police statement or witness account. Rajivi, he states that the sliding patio doors in room 1025 were actually open, meaning that the perpetrators could have fled out the back. This contradicts Raj's statement, saying that he's seen Avinash and Sandeep flee from the front door. Rajivi's witness statement does reference Avinash and Sandeep, but it also references seeing Dasan, the security guard. So not only was Dasan a potential initial subject or suspect, but he could have also have been a witness at the trial. But Dasan wasn't even listed and had total immunity, even though he is so obviously integral and in this theft ring. But it was Avinash's confession that became the turning point of the whole trial. Avinash's confession was taken in the presence of his lawyer, who witnessed it, but immediately after making his confession, Avinash retracted it, stating that it was made under duress and he had endured 3 days of beatings from the police. He said they basically tortured him and held his head underwater until he confessed. Sandeep agreed. He said he too was beaten by police. And this was not the first accusation of police brutality the department had received. They had numerous accusations of police brutality torturing suspects. I mean, police brutality exists everywhere and it's common knowledge in Mauritius. Mauritius has widespread mistrust of the police. In my opinion, this places a lot of doubt and apprehension in the jurors' minds. Even John said that he was like rough handled by the police when he was like initially questioned. So were all these witness statements and confessions made under duress? Are these guys being set up? Are they scapegoats for a lazy, corrupt police force? And this segues me into the lawyers. The defense lawyers in this trial were good at their job, I suppose. Not only were they lawyers, but they were also politicians and kind of celebrities, like socialites and social climbers, drawn to this highly publicized international trial. Obviously, a defense lawyer's job is to create doubt in the jury's mind. So they did, by honing in on John. For a start, defense lawyers in court showed hotel CCTV footage of a white couple arguing at reception. The lawyers argued that, there was like drama between the couple and they were not happily married. However, this was not John and Michaela. This was another rando white German couple. And with proper due diligence, the lawyers should have known this, and they probably did. They were just trying to muddy the waters, confuse the jury. Maybe that is them. It wasn't them. It was two different people. And it does, people argue. You can argue on your honeymoon. Who says you can't? Doesn't mean you're going to kill each other. I mean, is this not against some kind of lawyer ethics or code to present false and irrelevant evidence? And there is more false and irrelevant evidence. Trying to make John look guilty, the defense argued that these rich Westerners were into sick, sadomasochistic, I don't even know how to pronounce it, sadomasochist and violent sex. A perverse, erotic night gone wrong that John was trying to cover up. Or perhaps the defense argued that Michaela engaged in a dangerous sexual fantasy with a stranger. Like, it's so rude, it's so no scruples. Defense lawyers entered into evidence a sex manual. The jury and court laughed and sniggered at these disgusting Westerners. However, later, this sex manual turned out to be a small pamphlet insert inside the Cosmopolitan magazine that Michaela had bought at the airport. Needless to say, Michaela's family were horrified that lawyers were speaking about their devout Catholic teetotaler teacher, Rose of Tralee, daughter and sister, in this way, dragging her good name through the mud for something totally irrelevant and false. It was irresponsible, unethical, and lazy lawyer work. John had been ruled out as a suspect. He had a solid alibi. He was on CCTV during the time of the murder. A master key card was used to enter the room 2 minutes before Michaela's murder. Why did the lawyers not look for another potential suspect? Why John? Lazy. They could have easily defended Avinash and Sandeep without ridiculing the victims in this case. Anyway, I'm angry. I'm angry. Coffee will calm me down. No, it'll just make me more anxious. Defense lawyers argued that Avinash's confession and reenactment photos was characterized as the product of brutality, torture, and manipulation, using poor lower class villagers as scapegoats, something that police had much experience doing, so they didn't have to do their jobs properly and could sweep a botched investigation under the rug. And it seems the defense were spot on here. So the police blunders. At the trial, defense highlighted the enormous blunders police made. For example, not cordoning off the room for ages, not locking down the large hotel, and not interviewing all staff and guests. Only a small proportion of guests were actually interviewed, and many staying at the hotel didn't even realize there had been a murder. And it is important to interview the guests because it is completely possible that there was a violent offender or burglar staying at the hotel as a guest. Perhaps they got hold of the security key. Also, it might not have even been somebody staying or working at the hotel. The hotel has open grounds, meaning that locals were free to just like wander in and out. Another travesty blunder pointed out by lawyers was that police had collected hours upon hours of CCTV footage that was covering the crucial period when Michaela was murdered. Technicians apparently offered to show the cops how to use these tapes, these CCTV tapes, and police were like, oh no, we don't need your help. The technicians were snubbed. And as the police were watching the tapes, watching these recordings, they accidentally wiped over all the evidence. Like, man, like, They deleted the CCTV. They wiped the original footage. So stupid. Oh my God. What morons. So incompetent. Again, is it incompetence or is it conspiracy? I think incompetence. A botched investigation by an incompetent, corrupt, brutal police force who are working under pressure from the Prime Minister to expedite the case. The Prime Minister of Mauritius was very vocal during this very highly publicized international case and trial. He and the President even spoke about a possible death penalty, which, of course, if we go back to the trial, for the jurors, this really ups the ante. What if they wrongfully convict two men to their deaths? The Prime Minister also spoke about the shame the murder had brought to the island of Mauritius. In recent years, the island had been enjoying an economic boom from tourism, promoting elite and specialist getaways. But now the reputation and livelihood of the island was at stake, and this was a common thread in the media. So much so that the judge in the trial told the jurors not to worry about the effect of any verdict on the reputation of Mauritius. He reminded the jury they were not politicians and it was not their job to protect Mauritius's reputation. This is true. However, the reputation of Mauritius didn't really seem to enter into the mind or care of the media. The media had a field day with this case and trial. These rich, sex deviant Westerners was front page news. And the CCTV footage of the German couple was leaked to the media the day before it was due to appear in trial in court. During the trial, a radio show did a poll of who listeners, the public, thought was guilty of the murder. Who murdered Michaela? And the majority vote was John McAreevy. It was obvious that the media and public had been heavily swayed by the very vocal defense lawyers. Before, during, and after the trial, doing interviews, accusing John of being the murderer and the police as incompetent, which they were. Before the trial, one of the lawyers, Ravi, he did a radio interview saying that his client was guilty and admitted to the murder, but that it wasn't premeditated, it was an accident. However, when it came to trial, uh-oh. Oh no, my light just turned off. I think it exploded. Anyway, I'm going to look a little bit different now. However, when it came to trial, Ravi changed his tune and said his client was innocent. And surprisingly, this radio interview recording was not entered into evidence. It wasn't even listed, it was just gone. Why was this not used as evidence? I feel like the prosecution lawyer also dropped the ball. This Ravi lawyer was quite the spectacle. Described as flamboyant, he often had the court laughing and gave the press sassy comments with no respect to the levity of the case or the system. During the trial, Ravi was accused of having lunch with the police. Ravi denied these accusations and recused himself. He too then filed a complaint against the police for brutality. Feels like just like everyone in Mauritius does this, although maybe they just beat everyone up. Ravi literally told the court, "I will be back," Arnie Schwarzenegger style. Literally, in court, he said this, like he was some stand-up comic, like it's classy. He was never called to testify, thank God. And I'm sure you have noticed we're going over everything and we're not really talking about Michaela. Michaela became very much lost in her own trial. the trial became very much the people versus the police, and the people, poor people, versus the rich Westerners. And I'm sure this prejudice towards the Westerners comes from the fact that the tiny little island was colonized by enslaved people who were like brought there by many different Western countries to be a sugar plantation for Europe, and it's even sort of colonized to this day. So the defense lawyers here did an excellent job of using the country's wounds to control the narrative. As you can see here, the front page of this newspaper shows a rejoiceful, celebratory family as they learn their father and husband has not been found guilty of murder and will not be taken away from them. And I guess it is a little weird the way the media is celebrating instead of going back to the murder of like, oh, who killed Michaela? It was very much seen as like a win. I mean, were the Mauritian people not worried that there was a murderer on the loose? But then they do think that the killer, like, they do think the husband did it. They think it is John, I suppose. And we will abruptly end part two here, because there's nowhere else to end it. But there is more. Are these men telling the truth? What are the opinions of Michaela's family? And when will I get to the sectarianism? More drama to come. Please subscribe if you want to see part three. And for all my hard work, please give me a like. There was a lot. This was a lot. But it was worth it. Salam.